So we're going to move into the world of WIC and online education, because this is the tech panel, apparently. I, too, have no relationships to disclose. I always like to start with my co-authors. Martha Mesa is my colleague at PHFE WIC, and she is a fantastic research assistant who gets like 90% response rates at 9 months later. So I really am a big advocate for finding those research assistants and then keeping them as long as you can, because once you find really great ones, they make your studies just so much easier. And we have a terrific team at Berkeley, actually University of California, they're now at Berkeley and at Davis, Neela Rosen, Lauren Au, and Lorraine Ritchie. And this work really is not possible without really tight collaboration between the real world, WIC, and the academic world. And those partnerships, I think, are essential. So are you all familiar with WIC? So WIC, Women, Infants, and Children, Federal Nutrition Program, we're serving actually about 8 million nationally right now. We feel that WIC is one of the premier public health programs, certainly public health nutrition programs. And it's nice that at APHA each year there have been more and more presentations related to WIC. Last year, where were we? New Orleans? There was a really dynamic group of WIC speakers all in a panel together. And I'm really excited to see that. I do think that WIC needs to be well represented at this conference. So WIC, as you probably know, is a nutrition program for pregnant women, postpartum women, either 6 or 12 months, depending on their breastfeeding status, and then infants and children up to the age of 5. It's different from SNAP. We just learned about SNAP Ed. SNAP has slightly different income thresholds and, of course, serves more than just women and infants. And SNAP, of course, also allows participants to buy, I won't say whatever they want, but a large diversity of foods with their EBT cards, whereas WIC, if you're not as familiar with it, is a very specialized program. It's a supplemental program, and you can only buy the specific foods that are offered by the program. So those distinctions are important, and I always feel like I need to remind everybody what those differences are. SNAP-Ed is part of SNAP, but my understanding is it's not doesn't reach everybody on the program. So a difference with WIC is that education is required. So a big core WIC service is nutrition education. Clients get it every time they come in, a minimum of 4 times a year, often more often than that. So what we're finding now is akin to what our last presenters were talking about. People are moving to the internet, and our millennials are having babies, and that's who WIC is serving now. And our access to the internet is rapidly increasing among all poverty groups. So even our low-income families are having more and more access to the internet, largely through our phones. And so because of that, it's time for us all to really be thinking about education and the platforms that we use. WIC traditionally is based in one-on-one education, which I honestly think is going to be here forever. It's an important part of the program. Talking one-on-one to an RD, talking one-on-one to a nutrition assistant is very meaningful, and you get a lot from that. However, how do we make it so that when you come into the WIC site, you have a very specialized encounter, and you can then get more and more of your education online? You know, should that be happening? Because we know it's starting to happen. And how do we start to demonstrate whether that online education is actually making an impact? That was really the point of our work. With the migration of folks to online, I think we need to be able to demonstrate that online leads to behavior change. So that was really the focus of our research. Here it shows what online technology has shown to lead to behavior changes in a number of other areas. So I might have just said that. Our objective was to examine the impacts of online and in-person group nutrition education on the changes in knowledge, attitudes, and behaviors. Today I'm going to be talking about breakfast eating. That was the class we did. And since we finished the breakfast class, we also demonstrated impacts of a salt class, so teaching participants about how much salt people should be eating, how to cut down, how to change their behavior around salt consumption. So we've now finished the study on two different classes, breakfast and salt. So I'm out in LA. We have a lot of people there. Of course, we're in Chicago. There's a lot of people here too. Our local agency serves about 250,000 WIC participants a month, so we have lots and lots of people coming through our doors. And what we did is we picked two sites, and we randomly assigned 590 folks to either in-person education, which is the norm, that's typically what they get, or we randomly assign them to online education. So there have been previous studies of online and live education in WIC. One of the challenges is the randomization. So how do you kind of move people to something that they haven't done before? And I'll show you today that we were moderately successful at getting there. I think it was still randomization, but people still self-select, and I'll get there. And I think it worked actually fairly well to get people to migrate over to online. So our education focused, the one I'm going to talk today, on ways to reduce breakfast skipping and promoting healthy options at breakfast, like using WIC foods for a healthy breakfast, your fruits and vegetables, your whole grain cereals, your whole grain bread for toast, your whole grain tortillas for a breakfast burrito with your eggs, lots of really nice healthy examples for using WIC foods for breakfast. And then what we did is we used questionnaires before and after the education and at that 2 to 4 month follow-up. And for the live group, of course, you do your questionnaires live on paper, remember paper, lots of us still use that. And then for the online class, of course, you're grabbing your questionnaires online right around that class. I don't need to go too much in. You all can read what our statistics were here. Here's an example of that paper questionnaire that everybody got. And I don't know how well you can read it, but the first question is, do you have access to the internet so you could take a WIC class online? So obviously this is paper, so this is the questionnaire that the live group got. Anybody who said, no, I don't have any ability to take online, was not included in the sample. Because really what we were trying to do is look at people who would have access. So then over here, this is what happened when you got on our online system, Welcome to Easy Breakfast with WIC Foods. We went over the lesson plan, which was reasons to eat breakfast, using WIC Foods to make healthy breakfast, and challenges to eating a healthy breakfast. What's important is that the live lesson and the online lesson were as identical as those two modes can be. Of course, when you're live, you have the opportunity to have, you know, food demo kinds of things. There was no tasting in this class, but we could see there was more interaction, of course, than in a live class. You can't really mimic that online. So while the messages were the same in the two modalities, of course, the way they're delivered just inherently are a little bit different. So this is how then we did the questionnaire embedded right into the online. Did your children have something to eat this morning, et cetera. So here's where you get into seeing we did our best to randomize, and people didn't always stay in the group that we wanted them in. So we had the 359 in-person folks and 231 online. And if you look, the ages were the same, the kids' ages were the same, race is the same, and then you get to education, and you see what happens here. As you might expect, folks in the online group had somewhat higher education than folks in the live group. Now, we randomly assigned them to one group or the other. So it just means that the folks we randomly assigned online, they didn't all take online. So if those folks that we assigned to online opted out and came in live, we did not count them in the live group. So that's, I think, important for you to know. That's sort of how we dealt with the fact that even though we asked them to go here, you know, please try this, there were some features about them that just made them less likely to follow through. So education is different. Interesting, the relation to the child is moderately different, and this just has to do with more non-moms come into the WIC site. So we have some dads, we have some grandmas, but when you did the online, it was the mom who was taking the online. And then as you see, language is different. Spanish speakers, less likely to follow through on the online than English speakers. And I think I forgot to mention we did have the lesson in English and we had the lesson in Spanish. So that wasn't the barrier. They could take it in Spanish. And then time to follow up was a little bit different between the two groups. I'm less concerned about that because we're just talking about a couple days here, about 2 weeks. And then the online group, as you see, had a little more exposure previously to an online class, which was actually somewhat surprising because the clinics that we chose had very low use of online prior to this study. So what we see here is knowledge change. So we started with knowledge change. So who knows, I know a few of you in this audience know, who knows how much sugar WIC cereals can have per serving? 6 ounces or less. So when you go, 6 grams, I said ounces, 6 grams of sugar or less. Must be early in California. So when you go to the store now and you shop for cereal for yourself or your child, look at grams of sugar, and anything that's 6 grams of sugar or less would be allowed, potentially, but each state can make different decisions about what cereals are allowed. So what we see in both groups is really significant knowledge change from before the class to after class, and then some deterioration of that knowledge, right? This is sort of what we would expect. And I think sometimes it's harder to hold on to those, what I call factoids, you know, 6 grams of sugar, it's sort of this number. I don't know that people hold on to numbers as well as they hold on to concepts. So what was really nice to see is that both groups see a very nice increase, both groups see a little bit of a decline. When we move to this one, this is how many ounces of juice does WIC recommend per day? Anyone? 4 for this age group. So it's 4 to 6, but primarily we recommend 4, and we actually only give enough juice for people to have 4 ounces a day. So that's the WIC threshold. If you're gonna have 100% juice for our little guys, we really don't want you having more than 4 ounces. Now in the live class, we have this little 4 ounce cup that we showed, and everybody goes, oh, because have you seen the size of a 4 ounce cup? You know those Dixie cups you buy for water? It's about like that. So it was a very sort of a powerful image, and of course we showed that in the online class as well. So here we see lots of knowledge change in both groups and much less deterioration of the knowledge. And again, I think it was because there was a visual. It wasn't just a number, 4 ounces. It was this little tiny cup that really showed people we're not drinking a lot of juice, we're drinking a little bit of juice. So that had to do with knowledge. And again, we see similar things happening both in live and online. And honestly, you know, as a WIC person, I want to see both of them work. I want to see online work, and I want to see live work, and I honestly don't care if one's better than the other. I just want them all to show changes in knowledge and attitudes and behaviors. So it was really nice to see that in the knowledge change. We then get to, had an arrow. There it is. Here we start to see, this is about attitudes. So what are the reasons for skipping breakfast? I don't have enough time, I don't have enough food, I'm not really hungry, it's hard to prepare breakfast. Those were things that we asked about. So here we see actually more change in the online group, where attitudes were, I would say, improving after having taken the class, whereas we didn't see the same level of change in the in-person group here when it came to attitudes. Now we're moving on to self-efficacy. Some people love talking about self-efficacy. I am not one of those people. If Lauren was here, she would be telling you a lot about self-efficacy, but sort of the belief that you can make these changes. And here we see some in both groups, whether they can eat breakfast every morning, give child breakfast every morning, eat fruit, eat vegetables, and then give kids other WIC foods. So we see, again, in the online group, we're seeing a little more feelings of positive self-efficacy than we are in the live group. Then here, what I want you to mostly notice, you'll see this is, do you eat breakfast more? This is the parent. You see in the online group, we have a significant increase in eating breakfast. But what you might notice is in the live group, they started off better. So this is one of those sort of challenges that it looks like online led to sort of more increase in breakfast eating by parents than the live group did, but the live group started off at a higher point. So while my conclusion here is that online does seem to really lead to behavior change, I would be hesitant to say that the live doesn't. I think what we had happen in the breakfast group is a pretty quick ceiling. You know, you can only eat breakfast 7 days a week, and we were at 6 from the beginning. So I think we probably picked a behavior with not a lot of room for change. And then when we got to SALT, I wish I had submitted that for this conference, because the SALT for the live and the online goes crazy. I mean, both the behavior change for SALT consumption in live and in online is identical, and it's huge. So that's what's leading me to be more convinced that while we're seeing more about online working here, it's not because live isn't working, it's because I think we had an outcome measure that was harder to change. And we see something very similar here with kids eating breakfast. They were already eating breakfast 6.6 days a week. It's hard to get to, you know, we picked something that maybe wasn't right for change. Darn. That's why you do a study twice. That's why we do the SALT class next. So I think What I want to convey is I do feel that online nutrition education can be an effective supplement to the WIC program and probably to SNAP-Ed, to all sorts of other nutrition programs. I do feel it can be effective, particularly since I also know a lot more about how our salt class behaved and can convey to you that it's very convincing. Here, breakfast knowledge, attitudes, and behaviors did improve and were maintained 2 to 4 months later. And I think it's also important for us to be thinking about language. English and Spanish speakers have different preferences for how they receive their information. I will say that it's harder to get Spanish speakers to the online platform, but once there, they've been very satisfied and demonstrate real behavior change. That said, I don't want to have online replace live education. I think there's a lot to what happens in the classroom. I will say particularly for Spanish speakers in LA, we always know that the Spanish class is going to take longer because there's a lot more conversation. There's just a lot more talking that happens among our Spanish speakers than among our English speakers. I will also say that in LA County, the percentage of Spanish speakers has dropped dramatically over the last 10 years. We're seeing huge acculturation in LA, and I suspect in multiple parts of the country. So I do think that with us, WIC, serving millennials, we are going to have to be more and more tech savvy as we move forward. More and more states are moving to an EBT platform for their WIC voucher. Most of us, California included, and Illinois included, are still on pieces of paper, so paper checks. But by 2020, all of us are going to be migrating to the EBT platform, which in those states, there's 11 states so far who have moved there. I think that's gone very well. So there's going to be more and more consideration of online technology, and I think what we need to be doing is getting ahead of it, demonstrating where it works, and just as importantly, where it doesn't work, because I really think that the value of the WIC program is both a combination of high-quality foods that we provide to families, as well as the interaction that happens to moms when they're in the WIC site. Another big part of WIC is breastfeeding support and education, which is where, when you were talking about texting, I think there's a lot of room for technology and reaching our moms to support them, both in healthy eating, as well as in breastfeeding support, as well as in referrals. There's sort of the sky's the limit. But it's been an exciting foray into looking at online technologies. So I do think our strengths are that we had a large multi-ethnic sample. We really did randomize. It just doesn't always work that they do what you ask them to do. And of course, we do have those differences then between the online and the in-person groups. I will say in all the regression models, we controlled for the differences. So it isn't that we were just showing you data without controlling for the ways that the groups were different. And of course, our generalizability is in a largely Hispanic population. We're over 80% Hispanic in LA. So those of you in places with a little more diversity might see slightly different things. But what I've been hearing is that lots of the time the Latin population is slower to the technologies. We're not really seeing that to be the case. We are seeing that those populations are enjoying having online access, and it's helpful to have it in Spanish. Even though the number of English speakers is going up and up every year, I do think it's important to be providing information also in other languages. So I think I already said all this. I don't think I need to say it again. You can read. My time is up. So, thank you, and enjoy your conference.
All right, so any questions from the audience?
Good question. So Sally was asking, what does the online look like? Is it like a PowerPoint slideshow or a bunch of videos or a combination thereof? Currently, we have fewer videos and more, I don't want to just say PowerPoint slides. There's a little more interaction that's generated. The primary reason is when we started online ed about 4 or 5 years ago, most of our participants don't have enough bandwidth on their computers to run a video. Now, that's changing because phones are coming in, and over 50% of moms are using their phones, not computers. So we're now kind of changing with the times and inserting some videos, things like that. We've worked with Loanne and the audience on doing some of that. So I think we always have to be cognizant of the technology's limitations. So when we started this work, you really couldn't show, half the people wouldn't have been able to see the video. I think, I would love to know if people have done work on this to understand what people actually can see and not see. So the long answer is it's sort of a combination of some static to make sure everybody can see it and some embedded videos now. The breakfast class did not have embedded videos. Thinks they're loud, but we're not really all that loud. Using the texted data, no, because we're not repeating measurements. We're asking questions like one time that are tied to a text message, but we have a completely separate outcome evaluation with pre and post surveys that we are using to conduct that. But at this point, we've spent probably, I'm going to guess, about 18 months and a full-time person trying to tie the process data and the outcome data together, which is kind of a nightmare. So someday, yes, but right now, no. And what we have just in these texted evaluation questions are like completely unique things. I mean, so people can say, yes, I went to the farmer's market, but we don't know if they had been there before, or if they do that regularly, or if they were just saying like, yes, we don't have a lot of information. And that goes back to the fact too that the texted questions are just so simple we could do repeated measures, but we probably would annoy people. We could have better information through the text messages, but we're relying on our survey data to really answer questions about behavior change. We don't. Yeah, I mean, we don't. They might not have their phone on. They might not. I mean, sometimes we have hard bounces for messages, and those things are relatively sort of tiny in the sample that we have at this point. But we have no control over those kinds of things. So if somebody doesn't get the prompt message, or they get the prompt and the question at the same time, like, we have no knowledge of that whatsoever. Actually, if you look at the amount of time to response, people usually, I'm not sure what the like mean minutes are. Do you know that off the top of your head? We're not ready to answer this question. It's super fast, and nobody answers after like an hour passes. So they either answer right away when they get the thing, or we never hear from them. It's not like we get messages after 2 days or a week or whatever. We worked hard on, and I'll let Ash answer this too, because she did a lot of this work. We worked really hard in the beginning phases to identify time of day issues around texting. And do you want to share some of our focus group results?
Yeah, it seems like there was kind of a bimodal thing where some people liked it first thing in the morning and some people liked it in the evening. and there wasn't really a consensus about the best time. But we just asked people, we sat down with parents who were in the program and talked to them about it, and it seemed like people like in the morning or in the evening, largely.
And I will add, just in case you're considering doing this, that the time of day issue, it's kind of funny, like most, a lot of parents have just completely different preferences and you can't honor all of them, but a lot of parents are so busy that they were like, if you text me anytime between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m., like I don't care. Like, I'm not going to look at that, I'm not going to respond to that. And that's kind of what we went with, because that was a stronger opinion than the opinion that the morning message was important. So if we're going to text about breakfast or text about what your kid should choose in the lunch line the next day, because we use school menus and input like that to craft our messages, they want those things the night before. The stress, like really stressed parents want them the night before, so we went with that instead of honoring the, you know, sort of more the mild preference for the morning texts.
We need to try and move one more question, and then maybe the panel can stick around. Yeah, that definitely was a concern. How we definitely conveyed up front that, you know, there could be a cost associated with it if they pay per text message. And then another thing that we did was make sure that we have periodic dropout messages so they could text stopped so that they wouldn't have to continue paying.
Thank you very much for attending. Thank you.